Hey friend, it's David Nabinsky here in Brooklyn. Here at the Portfolio Career Podcast, we hope you take ownership of your career and design a life that you want to live. This episode is with Bree Groff. She is the author of a brand new book called Today Was Fun. Do you want to make work more fun? Well, listen to this episode. We talk about how to rethink about work, why it's okay to be an average employee but live a good life, how to do more fun work, important milestones in both of our personal lives, and so much more. You can learn more about the podcast on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my newsletter that I send out every 2 weeks, if not more. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Bree. Welcome to the podcast, Bree.
Thanks for having me.
We were talking about getting ready. I didn't know like if there was a fun way that you like to prepare or like to kick off podcasts. If it's like, say a bad joke or a silly joke or do some jumping jacks or something like that. I don't know. I didn't know if you had something fun that you like to do before you start a podcast.
No, I mean, literally what I did is I moved like half an inch forward and I'm like, I'm ready. Before I give talks, I actually stand with my back against a wall so that my shoulders go back and my head goes back. And then I say, I'm ready.
Oh.
That's my trick. But for this, I'm just...
Okay.
Yeah.
You don't have to lean entirely in. The mic's good.
Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah. I know. That's.
Yeah.
If we were recording somewhere else, if my own equipment, I would say like eat the mic.
Yeah. Don't eat this one.
Yeah. We got to keep this one. okay. But I actually used to do this thing. I kind of stopped it. I should get back to it. I know we were talking a little bit about like starting the podcast and like how I started in Seth Godin's course with Alex De Palma. And one of the lessons in there was this idea of like there was a vocal training exercise. And I actually probably should do it, but it's like going and like if you want to do it, you can, but
did I do it?
Do you notice a difference after that?
Yeah, I guess I feel very warm now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So like that used to be my little like prep and warm up before, because like it does get like mouth and vocal cords. So I'm having fun. I'm not done. I'm like, this is good. We're just like laughing and we're having a good time. Is this work? Does this count as work? Is this podcasting work?
Yeah, that's why I say work is just using your skills to create value. Mm. So we're using our skills.
Okay.
Hope we're creating value. That's it.
Okay.
Counts.
Okay. Good. Yeah. All right. So you recently wrote a book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about this type of stuff, doing work that's fun.
Yeah.
Kind of reshifting or reframing the way that we view work. What, like, a lot of people say that book writing is very hard. Like, how did you make it fun?
Yeah, I loved it, which may be the minority opinion. And not all parts of it. They're like, I'll start with the not fun parts.
Yeah.
The final copy editing where you're like, oh, just this one last word. Like, I annoyed my project manager so much because I'm like, just one change. That was just one last change. Because then that part was really hard. There were less fun parts of it. The writing itself, though, I thought was great. Like, the way I had sort of organized it, I had made this Trello board that I kept for probably 6 months before starting writing, where I had all the chapters laid out. And then under each chapter, whenever I'd come across a quote or an idea I had, or I would just pop it in the Trello board. So then when I started writing, it was just knitting. It was just like verbal knitting. So I just sort of put all the ideas together. But I thought it was really fun. Like, I've spent so long in consulting where, like, I've been trying to enable leaders to be like, well, what do you think you want the company vision to be? What do you think you want? Like, let's try and make your vision happen. So I think I just had so many thoughts about, like, this is what I think it should be, just, like, pent up in my brain, and they were ready. So it felt really good to unleash them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is like, I was curious about that because of this, like, there's a lot of people think book writing is hard, but it's very like meaningful. And like, I was wondering if there were certain lessons there that if you're like, okay, like
people think emails are annoying, and but they have to do it. And so, like, maybe there's a way to make it a little bit easier or more enjoyable. And maybe, I was wondering, maybe similar with book writing, you're like, it's hard, but like what I did is like one page a day. And then after that, I did like five jumping jacks. And like, was just like, I'm going to do it on my terms and make it like more enjoyable for me.
Yeah. I mean, I say this all with a grain of salt, because if someone is having trouble writing, I don't want them to feel like, oh, it's not for me, or I shouldn't do it, right? Like, there's always going to be some hard points. But I think it was enjoyable, one, because if I felt like an idea was really, like, wasn't coming, or I couldn't have the words for it, I just took it as a signal, like, this idea doesn't want to be in the book. My friend Sue, who's mentioned in the book a lot, she always says, the work will tell you what to do. Which sounds like a little woo-woo on first glance, but I think it's actually true in many ways. Like, some ideas come really easily, and I'm like, oh, these ideas want to be in the book. Some ideas didn't work, and I was like, I'm just not going to force it. But also, yeah, like, the experience of, like, writing was fun in the same way. I'm probably in the minority that I sometimes love crafting an email, because I want to be
me too.
Right. Like, I want to be the most interesting person in someone's inbox. And so if I have like a little turn of phrase, like, I'm out there to amuse myself. And then with that, I'm hoping I'm going to amuse somebody else. Yeah. And so that was very much the experience of writing the book, where, you know, I'd write something and I'd be like, I'm so clever, you know. And then sometimes my editor would be like, that's not clever, Brie. Like, take that bit out. But then once in a while it worked.
Yeah. And
so that the thought of like, I'm amusing myself, I hope I will amuse somebody else through this.
Yeah.
Was part of the fun. Because also, I didn't want to write a book about having fun at work and have that book be boring. Right. I'm like, this can't be like walls of text and research and ideas that people have heard 10 times. Like, that's just not going to be the case. So I just had fun with it myself.
I want to hear a little bit more about this. This idea, you wanted to be the most interesting person that's in someone's inbox. How do you do that? Like, what is that?
I don't know. It's like a little challenge for myself. I just, so the way I do, like, I love a cold open in an email. So instead of like, hi, hope you had a great weekend, here's the business. I love a, like, well, hell, it's humid today. Hope you're surviving. By the way, can you send me that report? You know, like, I like when I can express, like, some truth or something about myself, or, like, divulge something about myself. Because it's a way to connect with people. So, like, if email is going to be a form of written communication that we're all on every day, like, why not make it a little bit joyful? I love putting an exclamation point next to people's names, because I like when people do that for me, right? Our names are our favorite word generally. And so I want people to read the email and, I don't know, find some connection or joy.
Yeah. Was there a moment when, like, that shifted for you of, like, all right, like, did you get like a really positive email from someone, or like, when did you start to realize like, hey, I want to like kind of reshift these things that like, email is an example here, but like, how do I make it a little bit more like Brie? Like, was there a moment where you're like,
yeah, honestly, I credit this all to the founder of Nobel Collective, where I used to be the CEO. His name's Bud Caddell. And this was his philosophy first. So I came from before there, I was at another consultancy, and it was normal. I mean, it was a great consultancy, but it was very like, you start your emails like, hi, so-and-so, comma, I hope you had a great weekend. Bud was always starting his emails with ahoy, you know, and like, I was just, like, he really tried to make ahoy a thing, which it didn't really work, but also it was great because you read an email with ahoy. And you're like, now I've got your attention, right? And it's, and that's the point of an email. Like, you want to engage somebody, so why not be engaging? Yeah. And so just like seeing how he gave himself permission to be playful. Also, I was like, oh, well, he can do it, I can do it. And so then I just never stopped.
Yeah. I like trying to be human in email too. For me, I usually like to include videos. Loom video. Yeah, that's like, that feels fun and playful for me, of like, how do I Yeah, like literally like show up in someone's inbox. And it's like, hey, I'm here. Like, I want to talk to you. Like, so that's been like a little thing that it takes a little work, but like, I feel like there's been so many people, I feel like their first impression of me is because they've got a video from me in my inbox. And I'm like, I'm cool with that, of being the first impression of like, this guy sent me a video. Yeah. Is like a cool, I'm fine if that is like what a story that people tell people. I don't know what other stories they share, but hey, if that is like one of the stories of like, I mean, he sent me a video email, like I'm cool with that. But I think it's a great way to stand out. I think that is like an interesting place to like start shifting like how we view the things that we're doing.
Yeah, you sent me an email with Kermit dancing.
Yeah.
And I remember that.
And you said Kermit and I are coming. I was like, wait, do you have a Kermit?
Just like Kermit and I are excited.
Okay. Because then I was like, wait, did I not know that you had a dog named Kermit? And then I was like, okay, but I was like, all right. I took a note of it. I'm like, but I'm not going to like follow up and make it like, you plus one the Kermit. And then I was like, okay, we'll put a pin in that. We'll talk about it later. It like worked, I guess. I think that's another thing is, gifts are fun. Put that in there. Mm-hmm. Cause I agree. If it's all just like plain text, it's hard for people to like notice things, and like they're just like, oh, it's like an email, like a lot of text. I'll get back to it later. Yeah. So I like video. I like that. Songs sometimes include songs in emails. Sorry if you're like, hey, I got no video, I got no song, I'm out of here. I'm not on this podcast. I'm getting out of here.
It's just like, but you can apply those lessons to anything, right? Like, how do you take something mundane and make it amusing?
Yeah.
Because you're amusing yourself, you're amusing the other person. Like, it takes a little bit more time, but also it's like accelerates the connection, I guess, from like a business perspective, but also like more from a human perspective. It's just more fun to do.
Yeah. So fun things to do. I'm curious if you could talk about the seven, we're calling them principles, lessons.
I know, I call them rules, which sounds a little like mandating.
Yeah.
It was one syllable and I liked it. So
yeah.
Seven rules for better days. Yeah.
Should we rattle them off?
Sure.
Okay.
Okay. Now I better do a good job because I just launched this book. Okay. The first one, most things, most days should be fun.
Okay.
Maybe I'll rattle them first and then we could dive in wherever we go. The second one, your brain works whether you're wearing a suit or stretchy pants.
Which I'm a believer in the pants. I mean, like, you know, it doesn't...
They're such good pants.
Thank you. And I mean, I'm like that one definitely clicks. So, like, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm doing work.
Yeah.
I go and like some people are like, hey, wait, do you wear those pants? Like just like only at home on Zoom calls? I'm like, no, like any kind of meeting I go to. And they're like, really? And I'm like, yeah. Like,
yeah.
Why right? not?
You're just as smart in your cool stretchy pants as you would be. I feel this. This is why like my new summer look is like wet hair and like done. Or like why I showed up sort of in some kind of like ballerina swimsuit outfit, because I'm like, you know what, this is what I like to wear.
Perfect.
So that's the second one. The third one, shoveling shit is fun if you like your co-shovelers. Which is just sort of true. I think you just need the camaraderie if you like the people you're with. That takes care of a lot. Number four, make brilliant work.
Yeah.
Don't let conformity and busyness sabotage you.
Mm.
Number five. So far, so good, Brie. Number five, keep it cool.
Yeah.
We're all in it together.
Yeah.
So that's about emotional reliability. What do you do when work is stressful?
Mm.
So that's sort of the first section of the book about how do we make Monday through Friday more joyful. And then the last half is about, well, what do we do with the rest of our lives after work? So chapter six, or rule six, is you are the defender of date nights, crossword puzzles, and your health. And then finally, rule number seven is get good at life, not just work. And then you put that all together and you're having pretty good days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get good at life. I love that. Like, how did you start getting good at life?
It was For me, well, a little bit of context. Like, I grew up as the good girl. Like, someone told me to do homework, I did my homework.
Yeah.
Someone told me, like, memorize these things, I memorized these things. And it wasn't like my parents weren't particularly pressury or anything. It wasn't like out of fear. It was just, I just felt like I should try and get good at what I was being measured on. And that sort of like forced ranking schooling, it just, it gamifies your brain, right? In the same way that the corporate ladder does. In that, like, there was, at least in my high school, there was a ranking out of 957 people in my high school. I still remember the number. What's your number?
I wasn't going to ask you. I was like, yeah. It's kind of like, you don't ask someone's age, you know? You just like, it's like, yeah. I'm telling you that I didn't like this thing, so don't ask the detail, you know? It's just more of like, there's this system and I didn't like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because it, like, I did the system for a long time. So I think I always approached work as like get good at work, and then life just sort of happens around the edges, right? Like life is for recovering from work because you're tired. Life is for resetting laundry, groceries, whatever for work the next day, or like a little bit of enjoyment. But I think it's only been my like impending midlife, I think, that I've reframed that for myself, that I can use my A student energy to get really good at being a partner, or I have a 10-year-old daughter, really good at being a parent, or really good at being an exerciser, really good at being a sleeper. You know, like there's other parts in my life. And so not to say that I'm now just hyper ambitious everywhere, but it's more like a restructuring of where my ambition goes. So I say in the book, it's okay to be a meets expectations employee and an exceeds expectations human. Like, how can I be a really, really good friend? And it's, so it's just helped me know what to do with my ambition, which I think everyone has some sort of complicated relationship with.
Wait, what was that expectations thing?
Oh, that it's a, like, be a meets expectations employee.
Yeah.
And an exceeds expectations human.
Ooh.
Thanks.
That's okay?
Yeah.
Wow. That's...
If you're meeting expectations, you're not getting fired, you're doing your work. I mean, obviously, I have told a strong opinion that work can be fun. But also, it doesn't need to suck all of your ambition. Like, maybe it's really important to be an exceeds expectations friend. And it's, you just can't do it all, right? Like, that's exhausting. And so if I'm going to have 5 minutes to myself during the day, am I going to try and get two more emails done? Or I'm going to text my friend to say, like, oh, hey, you were sick last week. Are you feeling better? And it's like a rerouting of the ambition or energy.
And so it sounds like this is around, like, focusing on, like, what matters. And how did you kind of figure out what matters?
Yeah. Well, I talk about it in the, I mean, I've been thinking about this through the trajectory of my career, but I do talk about in the book, my like crucible moment as a human was losing my mother a few years ago. So she was diagnosed in 2022 with a terminal cancer. My father already had Alzheimer's. I'm an only child. So I was like, okay, here we go. Like, this is going to be the defining moment of these few years in the least, right? Like, if not, hopefully there's no more crazy defining moments. But I think it was my first time being so intimately close to mortality and losing somebody that was, you know, that close to me, or like really being in the process with her. Like, I went to every single doctor's appointment, moved my parents to New York, where, you know, they wanted to be here. And so it was really the genesis for a lot of the thinking in the book, because it's like, if you're, I talk about this moment where I was in the cancer center with my mom. It's a funny place because, you know, you look around and you think every single person here has a prognosis. Every person here is scared of losing their life and is hoping for more days. Like, every person is hoping for more days. That's the goal. And then I would talk to a friend from work, and they'd be like, oh, I can't wait for this week to be over. you know, everybody at the office is hoping for Friday.
Mm.
And so that felt like, oh, this is an emergency in a way that I hadn't really realized before. Because how common is it for us to say things like, oh, it's only Wednesday. Like, yeah. Oh, Sunday scaries. Like, can it be Friday? When will this week be over? It's almost like corporate platitudes.
Mm.
But then it just became so strikingly obvious how harmful that point of view was, because we're going to run out of Mondays.
Mm.
Definitely. No two ways about it. And so I decided, you know, I have all these learnings about my consulting work of corporate culture and employee experience and how to create environments where people love their days. And it just felt so much more urgent because, like, what are these oncologists even doing? Like, why are they even saving days if when we're healthy, we're just trying to get rid of them? So it was a big turning point, I think, or an acceleration maybe of my point of view.
Hmm. What was your mom's name?
Ruth.
Ruth.
Thanks for asking. Yeah.
Yeah. You lit up just, mm-hmm. just there.
Yeah.
What did you kind of love about Ruth?
I mean, she was a great mom. I write about also in the book, you know, she's really the backbone of the book. Like, she would come home from teaching. She was a kindergarten teacher. She'd come home from teaching and she would say frequently, once a week, like, I have the best days. And, like, I took it for granted at that point. I was like, oh, sure, mom. But, like, she really did. And I remember as a child just not really contemplating that that was rare. Like, that just became very, just like any childhood thing, grow up thinking that your family is normal, whether you're normal or not. And I just so appreciate, like, she valued her days. Like, I appreciated, like, I also write about, like, I appreciated that her impact was one-on-one human impact, which I think is so undervalued in work. It's almost expected that any company is like growth mode, right? Like, scale your impact. It would be weird not to say those things. And yet I really question whether that should be the goal. You know, like, she reached 30 kids a year. Like, that's not a million person scale, but like how would... Like, actually, I'm still in touch with one of her students who reached out to, like, when she had heard my mom died, just to say, like, your mom was my favorite teacher. She made such an impact. And this is kindergarten, like, right? This isn't even, like, a college professor that shaped my career. This is, like, that kind of formative experience. So, you know, for all that she gave to her students, you know, she gave to me the same. So, yeah.
How do you think that we can... Like, you talked about this impact that Ruth had on these 30 people. Like, how does that happen in the office or on Zoom or in hybrid? Like, this, like, how do you, yeah, what ideas do you have on, like, how we can be more impactful or have better, like, working relationships? And I know, like, the one about, like, number three was, like, who you do work with really matters. But, like, yeah, what do you think, like, my guess, or I'm curious your thoughts on this, it probably wasn't like how Ruth taught the students. It was maybe more about how she, like, showed that she cared or that she was human or that she... Okay, I'll pause there.
Yeah, I mean, it's from a, like, from my mom's perspective, like, teaching, you can always tell, like, it... Like, if you think back to all the key, I mean, I can tell thinking back to the teachers I had, like, you can tell the ones that gave something of themselves, that, like, put themselves in the game emotionally to, like, really care and really let themselves be seen, you know? And then there's the teachers that, like, stand up and lecture for 15 minutes and you're like, great, you know? But I think the same is true of work. Like, that's how I like to lead. That's how I think teams become more successful, when, like, you as a leader let yourself be seen as human.
Yeah.
I mean, my team, like, I've worked in consulting, so the teams sort of change frequently, but, like, so many teams have seen me cry for one reason or another. But I don't mind. Like, sometimes I'm crying because I'm like, oh, this project, like, I hope it goes well. It's not, I want to be clear, it's not like me unloading my emotions on the team that they then have to like sweep up after me. It's me saying like, I'm allowing myself to express my feelings and show up in my humanity and still feel confident and still feel like I can lead the team forward. You know, like you can hold both of those things. Totally. It's true that there's such a bad rap about like leaders. I mean, it's changing a little bit now, but like leaders shouldn't be vulnerable or you have to like show no fear or like you pass your talking points by internal comms. But I just think that just alienates people. You know, like the best leaders I know or the best managers I've had and the one I try and be is like, this is I'm really the human.
Mm.
Like I show up in my stretchy pants on the days I wear stretchy pants. Like I show up with my wet hair. I say when I'm excited. I say when I'm upset. But I think that, well, one, that allows other people to do the same in the team. And then also, like, it endears the team to each other, too. Because I always want anyone to know, like, I've got their back. Like, I care deeply. And in fact, like, it's controversial to say, but I think it doesn't impact business negatively. But, like, I care more about the team than I do about the business results.
Mm.
The trick is that it actually just does good things for the business results, incidentally, you know? So, like, I feel like I need to say that for all of the capitalists out there. Like, no! But, like, we have to care about the impact first. Don't say that. But it's
Did we lose the capitalists? Do we need to bring them back? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Come back. Yeah, we got to, you know, the subscriber count, we got to get up.
Yeah. But I just think it's not the point. Like, when I think about employees versus customers or impact, like, customers or clients, you know, they're giving a share of their wallet, right? And that's important because they bring the money to run the business. Yeah. But employees are giving their lives day in and day out, right? Like they're giving up their sleep, their health, their time with friends and family. Like that should be valued,
totally.
You know? And so if I can show anybody on team that like I care, like if you're sick or down or like you take care of yourself, like the rest of the team's got you. And then if you can endear a team to each other that way, then you're super resilient. And then you do good work because you like each other and you feel comfortable and confident. And then in some ways, the good work is the externality of
the byproduct of this connection, the camaraderie.
Yeah. Because that's how I just want to live my life. I don't want to sacrifice my happiness and joy for shareholder value.
Yeah. Also, I wanted to say that, like, when I lost my dad, that was a wake-up call for me. Or, like,
to hear it.
I think you said crucible moment, I think. Yeah. I would say it's more of, like, a wake-up call of, like, a... Not to say I was coasting, but I was, like, leaning on him more than I probably should have. And that was, like, a wake-up call. And I think I've become a much better human and man after that. So it is, yeah. So it's interesting how like you losing Ruth was this like accelerant to write the book. And then me losing my dad was an accelerant to like, hey, like he's not there to make intros for you. It's, I think thankfully it's stories like this that hopefully like inspire people to not have to have these moments because, they suck.
What was your dad's name?
Stan. Yeah.
That's a great name.
It's my middle name too. Yeah. Stan the man.
That's even better.
Yeah.
How long ago did you lose him?
This was a while ago, 2006.
Well, that is a while ago.
Yeah. But yeah, thankfully his impact still exists. I wish I had podcast. I have like no media. I don't know if you have any media with Ruth of like old videos or anything like that. That's the thing that like kind of sucks is like when you remember the people, but you don't have, which I guess like these days, like where's the content? It's like everything is content these days.
Yeah.
So there's something beautiful about that. Like you just have like the memories and the feelings, but also like it would be nice to have this stuff. And I learned a lot from him on like car rides. I used to like talk about how like car rides were him or like my first podcast episodes.
Was your favorite thing about him or what did he give you?
Mm, I think it's taken some time, but I think the thing that I like try to remind myself, like everyone really loved him and really liked him. So like, I think like having high quality and relationships like and friendships has like definitely one thing that I've like taken away from him. But I also think like he was really like authentic and was really himself. Like me wearing these pants is kind of like something that he would have done. He, I don't know if I should share this, but like he like,
now I'm excited.
He used to like rock like, he used to rock like a Speedo and would like smoke a cigar, like shirtless at the pool, like cowboy hat, just like chilling, just like not giving an F.
Yeah.
And so I think when I'm like fully expressed and fully like leaning into whatever like feels right, it reminds me of him.
What could be better?
Exactly.
I love that. I hope you do have a picture somewhere, or at least you have your mental image of him that way.
Yeah.
But like, yes. I mean, that's like my sneaking suspicion at the core of the book is like everyone just wants to be and be seen as themselves, including at work. Because like, yeah, for you to be your most fully expressed self and have that feel like your dad and his like ultimate teachings, you know?
Yeah. Like that's how I want to show up.
Like, yeah.
And I think it's got me thinking like, how do people tell their coworkers or their boss like, hey, I want to do more fun work? Like it feels like I'm curious on like how if there's a way to like communicate, hey, this is fun. And they're like, how does this hit the bottom line? Like I know that I've bumped up against that sometimes where I'm like, I want to do this. But like the reasons why are like, because I think this is fun and it's meaningful and it's like going to impact people. But I think that I've been told to lean towards more like present the business case. So
yeah,
I'm curious as you're an expert on this.
I rubbed up against this a million times. So, okay, where to start? First of all, like if you can't do the fun work, there's always a way to make your non-work fun for the most part, 95% of cases. So not to say that like if you get a no, it's over. That said, I think when leaders say no to the fun, like non-normal looking work, a lot of times it's out of fear.
Mm.
There's a weird thing that happens in consulting sometimes is like when we're consulting with somebody with a client at a director level or VP level, they're more likely to say, no, what's the ROI? Show me like what they're saying is I need to be able to show my boss that I didn't screw up here or like I'm making good business decisions. So it's really hard sometimes to get a yes for that good work. Ironically, though, it's the CEOs when we pitch crazy ideas who are like, hell yeah, that sounds good. Because I think the reason is because it takes confidence. Like it takes some kind of creative confidence or creative leap or like strategic bravery to do the fun work that is a little like, or maybe I should back up and say like usually work is fun or like the quality of the work is fun for a few reasons. One, it's like something new or experimental. So it gives you that like, well, I don't know if it's going to work, but like we're pioneers kind of feeling.
Yeah.
It's like creatively brave or provocative in a way. It doesn't have to be like, oh, anybody, you have to be in design or innovation this way. But like it could be a brave strategy. It could even be like a brave project plan. I don't know if you're like a PM or something like that. But that sort of, well, quite literally, that sort of like bravery takes bravery to say we're going to try it because there's some inherent risk in that as well. Honestly, what I found is like some people it's hard to lead people to the water. Like, if they're only thinking in terms of ROI, sometimes I'm just like, you're going to have to go on your own journey.
Yeah.
Right. So usually my instinct is, who can I find within the organization, either with a client or internal to an organization? Like, who can I find who has a little bit of that, like, adventurous, mischievous edge to them that we can sort of, like, be in cahoot or, like, cause good trouble, as they say. Because if you can, it's almost like by definition, if you can make a strong business case for why some activity is going to drive value, almost by definition, it's not going to be that fun in the way that I'm speaking about fun. Like, fun is experimental or brave, or because, like, those things at the edges, if they had a business case, then everybody would be doing them and they would no longer be brave, experimental, creative, fun. So a long way to say, I guess, what should people do? Try and find your, like, the people that you can, like, throw a wink to in the organization who would be down for that. And then you could always, the second tip would be to just, like, shrink the scale of the experiment down to something that feels safe. So if you're like, well, you know, we're on a podcast. So, like, if you're like, hey, company, I want to start a podcast. And they're like, what's the ROI on a podcast? And you're like, well, we don't really know if our, you know, we don't know yet. Then it's like, okay, well, why don't we do, like, a series of, like, 3 10-minute conversations, throw them up on LinkedIn, and then see what we learn. Like, you can usually get it small enough so somebody just feels embarrassed saying no at some point, right? You're like, 5-second conversation. They're like, fine, you know. So you can sort of, like, test your
Seems
way.
Seems like you've had an example of that.
Never. Oh, no. Everyone always loves my ideas. But then lastly, sometimes it's just not the right place, right? Like, some businesses are, like, if you're working at a envelope stuffing company and you're like, let's create a podcast, it's like, you're not at the right place, right? It's like a mismatch. And that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm hearing a little bit of this, like, fun is also around, like, innovative or dynamic or interesting or creative.
Sometimes.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Yeah. And so find the people that are, like, you know, that get you and that are also on a similar mission. I like that of this, like, the CEOs are
yes,
like, that's
because they're brave.
Yeah.
Because they know that risk produces, business impact.
Yeah.
And you want to have a risk portfolio, just like if you were, you know, playing in the market, like, you want to have some riskier stocks such that you get the high yield. So, like, the CEOs tend to get that, and people a little bit more junior are sort of in, like, cover your ass territory.
Yeah.
So also, when in doubt, see if you can skip level it up. It's my mischievous suggestion.
I like that. I like that. Yeah. I'm thinking about my risky ideas right now. Maybe it's going to be podcast episodes in a Speedo or something. Who knows?
Oh, my God. With your cigar.
Yeah, exactly.
That is a bold move. But, you know, I would sign up to be your first guest.
Oh, okay. I like that. Yeah. Okay.
Maybe with an air filter for the cigar smoke. But, yeah.
Cool. Thanks for that. That's cool. I mean, it only takes one. I mean, I literally was shouting out today actually is the day that I recorded the first episode of the podcast 7 years ago with my roommate at the time, and he was the first believer. And I give him a shout out every year so many times. And I think being that first person is, I was saying last night, I think it's a life hack of, like, because he's got a shout out for years, and I'm like, so I don't know if you subscribe to that life hack philosophy as well, because you're interested in leaning into it. Of this, like, be the first believer is like there's it's so underrated, but, like, it's also so hard, it's risky, so of course it should get the value.
Yeah, I think it sounds similar to that first follower video.
Yeah, right.
Well, absolutely, because it's like one person is ridiculous and the second person makes it like brings it down to earth. Yeah, I mean, I think that's why I'm naturally so excited when people I am drawn to ridiculousness, because I think it's brave and fun, and, like, and compelling and magnetic. And I think other people are too. Like it's, I think it's one of the best tricks in marketing. It's like if you can be a little bit ridiculous, that gets people people's attention in a world of like AI. So I always, that was my instinct is like, I want to encourage the ridiculous. I'm coming on your Speedo show. I would wear a Speedo if it wasn't.
Well, you got the wet hair. So we're like, we're already like, we're speaking the same language. This is great.
That's true. Yeah. I'll just bring my like surfboard prop or something. Maybe we would like.
Yeah. But we got enough stuff to noodle on here. So, okay. And then kind of like, I guess, wrapping up the episode a little bit here. But I think it seems like you like to end the day asking. I've been recently been journaling a little bit more. It seems like you might have a journal prompt or something like that, that I think, or like a question to ask people each day. That might be a good way to kind of end the podcast episode of like that kind of prompt, if that feels.
Sure. So I have, is it like a accompaniment to the book? I should have brought one today. These little library cards, you know, the old fashioned library cards, right?
Yeah.
Where you put your date and everything. So I made some with a designer friend. And so you put the date and then it says today was fun, question mark. And then you can put like a little, it's a little spectrum, like yes, no, and then one moment of fun. So I guess that would be my journal prompt for the end of the day. My hope with the book and just like what I hope for the world in general is that on more days, at the end of the day, we're all curling up in bed and thinking today was fun. And if we can do that most, not every day, of course, but like if we can do that most days of our lives, I think we've won. Like you've won the game. You've done something right. And so I think that would be my prompt, like how fun was today? And you could decide how you could make a little spectrum on a 1 to 10. But I think the important part of that is not just to say yes, no, but in the library card, there's a space to write down one moment of fun. So I write about the notion of thin slicing your joy. So some days feel categorically bad, but they're not. Like it's sort of like calling a gravel driveway flat, right? Like a day is not categorically flat. You know, if you're an ant, it's like a mountain range. So the question is, what was like a local maximum throughout your day? What was one moment of fun? And like even on the very worst days, there's always something. I don't know. You had a sip of coffee and it tasted really good, right? Like you passed a stranger or in the elevator and they held the door for you. Like one little moment of fun. Because I think if we can attend, like if we can put our attention towards those little things, it's a way of sort of like soaking up all the joy that's on offer. Because there's so much joy on offer every day. We just sort of like we're just like, here's my phone and like, let me get to the train. And like, we're just missing it all. As opposed to like, when you sit down to eat a sandwich, you look at that sandwich with anticipation. Like, this is going to taste so good. You take a bite. And so it's like, the joy is there for the taking. We're just not always taking it. So to summarize my long answer, here's the journal prompt. Was today fun? And what was one moment of fun that you can appreciate no matter how the day was?
And send me an email on what that was if you feel comfortable sharing that. But if I would love to hear it. So send me an email. I guess maybe we'll just subject line today was fun and then send me the response. And people can buy the book, they can subscribe to your Substack. Anything else you want to share?
That's buy the book, leave a review. I'm saying all the things that I need. I'm on Instagram, LinkedIn, you know, those sorts of places, Substack, all that. But I hope they love the book.
And I hope this episode was fun.
I had a ton of fun. Yeah, we got to Speedos and scars and dead parents. And, you know, it was like a really wild ride. So thank you.
Thanks, Bri. Really appreciate it.
Hey, friend. Thank you for listening to this Portfolio Career Podcast episode. I would love to hear what you learned or took away from this episode. I hope you find me, David Nabinsky, on Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Also, if you want the best insights on the podcast and to hear my learnings, please subscribe to my Portfolio Career Substack newsletter that I send out every 2 weeks. You can find that on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com/newsletter. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Thank you so much.